This is Rena Janna, Innovation Department Editor at Business Week, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Nicholas Christakis. He's the author with James Fowler of Connected, The Surprising Power of Our Social Networks and How They Shape Our Lives. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So in your new book, you talk about social networks and banking and how actually they're nothing new and how the idea of a financial panic traditionally could spread through these tight networks of bankers. But I'm curious, you know, with all of these new electronic social networks like LinkedIn or Facebook, whatnot, that people are on, do you think these new network tools can help avoid panics or not? I mean, I know we're obviously in a big recession, but what's the role of sort of the new media network?
No, if anything, I don't think they do that at all. I think one of the key things to understand is when people hear social networks nowadays, they think in fact of those new technologies. But in fact, we've been embedded in real life offline social networks since we emerged from the African savannah. It's kind of like the Force in Star Wars or like the Matrix. It surrounds us. We're all embedded in these vast networks of interconnections. And through these connections, we're in touch with what's happening in distant parts of the network. So if your friend's friend's friend, for example, adopts a new behavior, that can ripple through the network and affect you, even if you don't know that person. And one of the things we argue in the book is that human beings actually evolved precisely to be responsive to these kinds of flows through human networks, and also so as to be able to influence other individuals who they might not be directly connected to. So these new technologies in some way take online a very ancient behavior and phenomenon, and we don't think that they fundamentally alter human interaction or alter the basic phenomena of influence and connection, but they do have some effects.
And speaking of those effects, I mean, so now it might be easier to sort of analyze people's networks. And I'm wondering, you know, you wrote about how human social networks have economic moods. And I'm wondering, with these tools, could one sort of tap into that economic mood or understand it or analyze it maybe a little bit more quickly or efficiently than in the past?
Yeah, I mean, these types of networks have diverse effects. I mean, we talk in the book about, for example, people finding jobs, how they typically find jobs not from their friends, but from their friends of friends. In fact, in some ways, in some very deep ways, this reflects the way people find sexual partners. And we argue in the book that one of the functions of networks, one of the ancient functions, is to identify, you know, partners, actually. But the networks, as you alluded to at the beginning, affect economic phenomena at all levels. So they affect human beings when they are, you know, the person on the street when he or she is looking for a job. Certainly, for example, when we see bank runs, as we discuss in the book, for example, with Northern Rock, people were more prone to withdraw their money from a bank if a friend of theirs was panicking. There's some actually beautiful historical evidence from bank runs in the 19th century that we also contrast to. So people on the street, when they're looking for a job, when they're panicking, when they're trading for stocks, when they're developing tastes in purchasing music or going to movies, all of they're influenced not only by their friends, but by their friends' friends and their friends' friends' friends. And in fact, we've looked a little bit at Facebook and how tastes as expressed in Facebook can flow through the networks. And in addition, in the book, we look not just at the network of ordinary people on the street when it comes to looking for jobs or panicking or buying things, but also at the networks of bankers and traders. And here, too, it's quite clear that even though many of these trades are placed anonymously, sophisticated traders can tell who's moving and have social and financial and economic relationships with these people. And so behaviors within these networks can spread and flow as well. And finally, of course, there's an old topic with respect to the economy, which has to do with interlocking board membership, where information can flow and influence can flow by virtue of people sharing seats on boards of directors. And all of these are the kinds of things that we explore in the book.
And, you know, the book is really, you know, full of vast amounts of information about how deep these networks run, obviously. Now, with so many industries in turmoil, you know, from banking to the auto industry to even print magazine publishing, people that have built up these vast networks, I mean, is it possible to remake a network?
Yes, there are some strategies. I mean, we don't, you know, the book is not a how-to book in the sense that we don't provide explicit guidance on how to go about you know, having a network that's optimized to a particular function, given whatever the person wants. But there are lots of ideas in the book that would be relevant, I think, to individuals. For example, whether to introduce your friends to each other or not, like how that might affect you, or whether to make the effort to get to know your friends of friends, how that might affect you, or whether to position yourself in the middle or on the edge of a network. For example, if I might, I'd like to conjure up this visual image of a network that many people, it's entered pop culture, so some people might be able to imagine a social network in their mind's eye. And now imagine that you could be a node on the edge of the network with, let's say, a person who has six friends that's on the edge of the network, or you could be a node with six friends, a person with six friends in the middle of the network. In both cases, you have six friends, but in one case, you're on the edge, and in one case, you're in the middle. Just like, for example, if you were in a crowded dance hall, you could be surrounded by six people, and you could be in the middle of the dance hall or on the edge. In both cases, you're surrounded by six people. Now imagine that a deadly germ is spreading through the network. Where would you rather be? Would you rather be the person on the edge or on the middle? Most people would say the logical choice, which is the edge, because the person in the middle is being buffeted on all sides, is more likely to get this germ. But now imagine instead that a valuable piece of information or gossip is spreading through the network. Now, contrary-wise, you'd rather be in the middle. And so this idea, this notion of centrality, which is a very fundamental one in networks, also is something people might want to think about, how central they are in the network and how that benefits and harms them, but in the economic sense, mostly benefits.
Right now, a lot of companies are looking into this idea of the social network. I mean, obviously, it's a very hot topic with companies like Facebook, so in the public consciousness, and people looking to value, you know, social networks. I mean, they can be hard to value beyond sort of the human value, but is there any way to sort of value these networks beyond that sort of human capital?
Yes, I think there is. There are two ways I can read that question. One is, for example, how do networks in the workplace affect the bottom line? How do the patterns of interconnection of workers or the pattern of interconnections among doctors who are practicing medicine, for example, an example we've thought some about, can you encourage these networks to have useful things diffuse more readily within them, whether it's workers on the shop floor or doctors in hospitals? And we firmly believe there are ways to do that, and that these networks are a type of capital that the companies have built up or in any case exist. You can strike oil in a piece of land that you had. It had value before. Now it has even more value when you discover the oil. And so, in a way, these networks can be a kind of found capital. But actually, the bigger point we make in the book, which is we focus on in the last chapter, is precisely, you know, how social networks have value for our whole society. And in fact, how all human beings are part of what we call a superorganism, that we partake of this larger collective, this entity, and that there are ways we can think about how we can tap that value. And we talk a lot about how the flow of things through networks enhances the well-being of everybody, and therefore, you know, is a type of capital.
The book is Connected. Dr. Nicholas Christakis, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your interest in our work.